Hello, everyone. Welcome to Squares the Cube, a multidimensional podcast where we discuss and ramble about MTG Cube. My name is Alex, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how are we doing today?
It's an amazing Tuesday, Alex. I'm always excited to be hanging out with you.
Aw, that's very kind of you to say. I feel very warm and fuzzy about that at the moment. And we also have another co-host on the show in Jesse. Jesse, how are we doing here tonight?
So good. You guys woke me up early, but aside from being a slight bit hangry and a slight bit sleepy, I am great. A little food will fix me right up.
That's good. Having anything yummy here for your dinner / breakfast?
I don't know yet. Aside from feasting on this excellent cube list that our friend Jake here has put together, I'll have to think on it. But Jake's joining us as well, so let's just get to him because I'm not that interesting. Jake is the curator of the Bodleian Cube, a cube that seems to be super jumping and adventuring into the new cards released lately. So we're excited to get talking to him. Jake, you also have one of the most interesting and possibly Greek-inspired names I've seen of our guests so far, Deinonychus, being the Discord tag. Where'd that come from?
So, hi. And, so I always loved dinosaurs growing up, and so a Deinonychus is, you know, the raptors from Jurassic Park. The Deinonychus is really the closest dinosaur to what those, you know, actually would have been. Actual velociraptors, kind of chicken-sized, give or take, so... Mm-hmm. When I discovered that growing up, you know, that became the username.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, we're glad to have you on.
Glad to be here.
Very cool. That is awesome. That I love the inspiration for the nickname, too. That's a great source to pull that from. Well, great. Well, we'll start out like we do a lot of weeks here, where we are going to start about talking what people have been cubing the last week. And my understanding is, Jake, you have gotten the opportunity to do some fun drafts here over the last couple of weeks. You want to talk about those real fast?
Yeah, so for the past 2 weeks, I was fortunate enough to get the KubeCon server digital weekly draft to be of my Bodleian Cube. And so this was awesome. I basically got to see, you know, 8 people who aren't part of my local play group at all. Most of them had never played the Cube before draft. You know, I watched the whole thing. I didn't even play games, but it was fantastic to get to watch and see.
Well, very cool. That's, yeah, definitely awesome when you get a chance to have people outside of like a regular playgroup draft your cube too, right? You get to see how a lot of other people would value and pick cards that we don't normally have the opportunity to get play data from. So did you get the chance to play in any of those as well, or were you just watching?
No, both times I was just watching. I think you can see a lot more about how your cube is playing when you're not there, you know, influencing the draft by, you know, taking cards, affecting what people are seeing.
Picking what you might perceive as the best cards, etc., right?
Exactly. You know, it's interesting to see, you know, what archetypes show up, you know, what pops up that you've never seen before. And, you know, if I take one of those slots, you know, I might not get to see, you know, some of the cool decks. There's 2 decks I've never really seen before pop up.
That's nice.
Very cool. We are going to have to dig deeper into that when we get into talking all about your wonderful cube here tonight. But real fast before we do that, Jesse, you and me had the opportunity to do a draft of your newly refocused, remastered, re-edited, I don't know what else to call it, version of your Powerful Magic's cube. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you've been doing with your cube real quick and how your draft went of that last night at Wayward Games?
Yeah, no, remixed, revived, yeah, revitalized. I don't know what you want to call it. Really, for me, it's a repersonalization because my cube has kind of accidentally moved into being just what is expected of a vintage cube. It was starting to look a little too similar to, you know, what everyone else was doing. Not to say that that's a bad thing, but I just felt like I had kind of lost what I loved about cube in favor of trying to keep up with the curve. And I just kind of decided I was done with that. So the first draft of the cube was just flipping through cards. And if I looked at the card and said, I wouldn't be excited to open this, I set it aside, which inadvertently at first kind of meant I had neutered aggro because I just don't play it, which led to me just deciding to hard cut it because I didn't want to have 3 random aggro cards in and it not be a supported archetype. So it's led to a very mid-rangey, long game, big game design theory cube that is full of cards I'm excited to play. And I'm just hopeful that, you know, the cards I love to cast are exciting to other people too. But so far, with the 6-man we got going on Monday night being the first run of it, people seem to like it. I was able to throw together a 5-color pile, mid-range control pile that has the opposition as its kind of like primary closer and up the Beanstalk. I wanted up the Beanstalk to have a lot of support, so I've got a lot of cards in there that have technically 5 or more CMC, but they get that cost broken in one way or another. You know, March of the Other World, your Prismatic Endings, your Leyline Bindings, any Delve cards especially. So there's Delve cards that aren't included in a lot of cubes, like Tombstalker and Murderous Cut, just to make up the Beanstalk better. So yeah, I was playing this 5-color control list and got to battle Alex's sick deck Monday night.
We did. We did get to battle. And Ryan, I will answer your question before you ask. Jesse did come away with the victory this week. So I know that this has become the running bit on the show, but he did. But we had some amazing games that went back and forth. I mean, the first game we played probably was a grind fest that went for about 35 minutes. And so I had a very fun deck that I really enjoyed playing. Paxman picked one, a sneak attack, wanting to lead into the more mid-range big things that Jesse was doing. And definitely had some fun things to cast with that, like Atroxa and a bunch of other...
Ministry.
Yep, Titan of Industry, a bunch of other just big creatures that did lots of great things for me when they ETB'd and then would eventually leave the battlefield. But one of the things that Jesse has been doing with this cube is either finishing out cycles that weren't finished, like the Kavu cycle, as well as the Sylvan Library cycle, as well as modifying cards that he enjoys that he wants to be able to bring into the cube, but they need a little bit of a power boost in order to hang with the rest of the cards that are there. So I was very fortunate enough to, in pack one pretty early, also pick up a copy of Birthing Pod that he has redone, where he allows it to be a companion in your deck as long as you are playing creatures of 6 different mana values inside of your deck. And so that way, obviously, the player is...
Total.
Total. So you have to have, you know, like a 1-drop, a 2-drop, a 3-drop, a 4-drop, you know, et cetera, et cetera. As long as you have 6 different mana costs within your... for creatures within your deck, you can companion the Birthing Pod and get it as the new companion rolls by paying 3 generic mana to add it to your hand. And so I was able to meet that feat, and so had Birthing Pod companioned in this deck, and just had an absolute blast of a time being able to, like, every game pull out a Birthing Pod and turn my... you know, Shriekmaw into my Grave Titan, which became the Atroxa, which eventually became the Ashen Rider at the top of the list. And so doing lots of fun things with that. And I would highly... we're going to definitely have to do an episode of this on the future with kind of re-editing cards if you want them to be in your cube and some of the things that you could potentially do with them, because Jesse has done a lot of fun things with this list, and it's definitely going to deserve its own episode here in the future. But I had a good time. We absolutely got crushed in the team draft. Jesse's team just tore our team apart, and he did beat me in that round, but we had a very good time drafting Jesse's new list, and I'm very much looking forward to when we get that back on the table here in about a month's time. So
yeah, I'm really, really happy to hear it. I do have to shout out Max of the Raveyard Cube, good friend. Now I'm happy to say that I stole the Birthing Pod idea from him. So I'm excited to, next time I get to play his cube, steal some more great ideas.
Very cool. Well, Max, thank you so much for that, because I had a blast playing it. And so if you are listening to this episode, know that we had a very good time doing that. Well, cool. Well, guys, it sounds like we've been having some fun cubing here this week. Moving on to the main subject of our episode, we are going to be talking to Jake here about his cube. And before we get into doing that, though, we definitely like to do a little bit of a Magic origin story. And so, Jake, starting out here, let's have you tell us a little bit about yourself. When did you get into playing Magic the Gathering? How did that adventure start for you?
So, you know, I had the, you know, I think traditional experience of playing a little bit growing up as a kid, where, you know, the older kids on the block would absolutely destroy me. You know, I was convinced they were making up rules, so I never really got into it much at the time. You know, I officially want to say I got into Magic during the pandemic, you know, actually. So one of my best friends, who's still in my cube group, you know, to this day, he actually bought us some Yu-Gi-Oh decks. They were like old school ones with the, you know, decks from the original TV show. And so, you know, we had some fun, had some drinks, played them. And, you know, so he bought a pack, he opened a $400 card. And then our other friend said, Magic is way better. You know, we should try this. And so he bought us some Magic starter decks, you know, with that money. And then we just, you know, actually got into it.
The origin story. Is he cracked an ultra rare and sold into Magic?
I love that.
That's obscene.
Do you happen to remember what card he pulled? There was not a lot worth that kind of money.
It was a Black Luster soldier.
Okay, I'm about to say it had to be one of the Envoys or like early Yada or something. Yeah, that makes sense.
I know very little about Yu-Gi-Oh! Beyond watching, you know, the original show and, you know, playing very close to when the game came out. So, you know, I recognized the name from the, you know, TV series way back in the day, but, you know, I couldn't tell you the specific, you know, finish, et cetera, of it.
Oh, no, it was, I can. It was the secret rare, but, but that's okay. That's, the card was insane.
Jesse's a man of many talents when it comes to the games.
Gotcha.
Jake, when did you start building and playing Cube?
Yeah, so for us, it was actually pretty quick after starting Magic. So we, you know, we were interested in trying Limited, but, you know, we didn't want to buy, you know, packs. So that same friend, you know, he purchased the Card Kingdom Starter Cube. And so really our first experiences drafting were playing, you know, this cube, which was a good time. You know, don't get me wrong, you know, fondly remember, you know, scraping by for fixing with, you know, a couple, you know, gain lands.
I am completely unfamiliarized with this. Jesse, do you know what this is?
No, this one, aside from being kind of interested that he almost started with Cube, No, I've never heard of this.
So it's basically, it's mostly bulk, you know, to be frank, you know, it's Card Kingdom essentially releases a lot of cubes using, you know, cards from the most recent sets, you know, not ones that are worth a ton of money. You know, it's a good starting experience. You know, we had a good time with it, but, you know, it didn't have a ton of longevity.
Variability. So you guys played it a few times and got sick of it?
Yeah. Yeah. So we did that. And then, you know, the cube died down for, you know, a little bit. You know, we tried doing pre-releases and stuff, and then kitchen table decks started to have, you know, classic power level imbalance because there was no restriction to what we could put in them. And so then I built this cube, you know, call it summer 2021, and, you know, that is when pretty much we started playing only cube together as a group. You know, we've got a couple other cubes in the group, but, you know, that's how we got into it, and, you know, that's really all we play together these days.
No, we have to are we going to have to rebrand Decker's awesome website to Only Cube? We don't, do we? That is not to happen.
I sure hope not. That definitely sounds like a subject that could maybe get us in some trouble. So. No, but that's awesome to hear that you're, it sounds like your group was very kind of group focused from the start then, right? That you were looking for a play experience that you could all share and enjoy, and Cube was a way that you guys could all do that with the same card pool, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these guys have been, you know, friends of mine for decades at this point. You know, it was, so really we migrated our friend group into playing Magic. We didn't, you know, build a cube group from scratch out of people who were interested in doing it.
No, that's awesome. Fine. Yeah, that's a really great way when that happens. It's just because then it brings lots of other great, you know, memories and times with it. And no, that's really cool. I like hearing that. It's a great story.
A little jealous.
Jake, can I ask, do you remember what the cube set was that you guys started with? That the starter cube that you had purchased from Card Kingdom?
It had a lot of Kaladesh, Battle for Zendikar, M21, some Modern Horizons 1. So it was spread out amongst different sets. You know, I have, you know, really fond memories of, you know, Bogard on Dragonheart, a Modern Horizons common that you can, you know, you can sack creatures and make it a, you know, big dragon that hits people. And that card was really good in the cube. And
okay, so fairly recent.
Yeah, with those yeah. cubes, it was a lot of bulk stuff that they were trying to get rid of, I think, where they created a list of something that they had a lot of, you know, inventory of, and then made a cube list from there, and then put a bunch of copies of it together, and then were selling it as like a package deal. Is that sounding right to you?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And so they make new iterations of it all the time. Once it sells out, they change the list. You know, they're not looking to, you know, reacquire more Bogard on Dragonhearts.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's sell more versions of the cube.
It's kind of, the Card Kingdom Bulk Cube, which is, always awesome when those go on sale.
That's neat. I didn't know they did that. I mean, it's a brilliant way to monetize that bulk, because as someone who's ran multiple card stores, that was always a struggle, was how do you turn the cards no one wants into money, because you end up with them as a card store no matter what you do. We just usually sold like
anything.
Yeah, we usually just sold like bulk boxes or something. But I guess, you know, when you have that much data to pull from, it's easy to find exactly what cards you could pull copies of for a cube. So that's brilliant. Dig it.
Well, cool. Well, let's transition on then. So obviously that's where you started. And now we are at another great chapter in your cube history with your cube here that's going to be at Cali Cube Champs. So would you want to introduce us to your cube and its design goals?
Absolutely. So really, when it comes to the Bodleian cube, you know, this is a cube that has plenty of iconic and powerful magic cards. You know, your Lightning Bolts and your Snapcaster Mages are absolutely here. But what I think really makes it different from a lot of other cubes that play in this space is that they really, these cards coexist with archetypes where you have to build an engine, right? So you've got decks like Sacrifice or Aristocrats, even, you know, some, you know, big tokens payoffs that are doing this. And, you know, I exclude cards that would invalidate these decks that are trying to build an engine. You know, realistically, you know, I will never tune the power level of this cube such that Aristocrats is not a viable deck.
Respect.
And, you know, so the other, you know, key pieces to this, I would also say it's a cube where I, you know, there are a lot of archetypes in this cube. You know, one time I had a drafter tell me that they were doing some test drafts online and they kept saying, you know, I had to keep looking at the list to make sure it was just 360. You know, there are just, you know, so many directions I could take it. And that's really the vibe that I'm trying to curate. You know, when you're in a black-red aristocrats deck, I don't want you to just be looking and saying, well, now I take all the black-red aristocrats cards, you know, blinders on, I've found my rails. You know, I want you to see that you've got, you know, Greater Gargadon and Mayhem Devil, and then you see maybe a Titania Protector of Argoth, and you think, huh, you know, I could branch into this lands thing where I'm, you know, sacking my lands and starting to get benefit from that. And maybe you see, I don't know, any number of other synergies that you can kind of emergently build while you're doing it.
I like that.
Yeah, I love, you know, being able to chase these, you know, archetype goals, but I really hate when I draft a cube and it's, oh, you know, I'm in the blue-white spirits deck, which means I take every blue or white card that's a spirit and I, you know, don't look at anything else. Yeah.
Almost like an auto pick per se.
Right, exactly. And I don't want people to feel like there are auto picks. And one more thing I do to incentivize people to do that is I give all of my drafters a Cogwork Librarian in their pool. And so I think this really lets them speculate on these build arounds. You know, when you see a card like Winota, Joiner of Forces, which some people can be dubious on, I think the card's incredible. But you're never worried that, you know, if you take the Winota, you know, your really key piece that you want to hit off of it, you see it, you know, at the same time you see your on-color shock land that you need to turn your fetches on. Well, you can take both.
Mm-hmm.
You get the opportunity to basically lock in your strategy and or combo pieces.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I think we're accidentally in a similar design headspace, which I'm thankful that I'm not the only person doing such, but I'm definitely in that same vein where I don't want people just kind of like locking in. I do so by making sure you have the colors to diversify your deck, typically. My cube's mana fixing is very, very generous. So people often, you know, they think they're playing just black-red, and then they're like, but wait, I get to play this. But yeah, I mean, I love this for sure, because I'm seeing I could play three different aristocrat decks pretty easily. And they would all be good, so kudos.
Exactly. And I'm so glad you said that. That's exactly the kind of vibe that I'm playing spells or aristocrats or blink or, you know, whatever, name your other, you know, most popular cube archetypes, but you realize there's actually subdecks here that cross-pollinate together and come in ways that you're not going to expect. And on the fixing point, you actually hit my next note. There is very strong fixing in this cube. It's double fetch, double shock, single cycle of surveil lands, and then one miscellaneous cycle that I find, you know, is the land that most helps the strategies in that color pair. And so, yeah, you absolutely can find your colors to put a deck together in a lot of colors, but the fact that the mana base is really painful is a feature and not a bug of this environment.
For sure.
I think the average deck is 2 to 2.5 colors in this cube, and that's because with the mana base being this painful, you're not going to, you know, just go into a third color to take replacement level cards that are just a little bit better. You know, it's probably not worth the life cost.
Medium or mediocre in the sense of what you're trading off from a life value.
Exactly. Yeah. And not to say these cards are bad, of course, but, you know, it's just there are cards that are, you know, middle of the pack. And if you're black white, you're not going to say, well, now I'm Abzan to play middle of the pack black cards.
Right. But if you're blue green, you might be white to get a board wipe. So, I understand. I like it. I like it a lot.
An analysis of your cube, it looks like you're at about 18% lands, which I know is definitely higher than some cube curators, but definitely about the same as a lot of the ones that tend to put a special stress on lands, which is really great that you give the players the ability to make the switches like that, and also to, you know, have the ability to play their cards, right? That there's less dead slots in their sideboard at the end of the draft because there's more cards that they can play in their pool, right?
Yeah, and you'd be surprised. You know, I actually just added the Surveillance as the sixth overall cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been on the fence about it for a while, but so far in testing, I haven't felt like people are struggling to hit playables at all, nor have I felt like getting fixing is too easy. If anything, I really just like that they add this cool texture to the fetch, you know, mana base. Even your aggro decks will probably play an on-color Surveil, just, you know, if they happen to, you know, be fetching in a case where they don't need the mana that turn, being able to add some card selection to it is, you know, worth the times when you're going to draw it.
And no, and that's definitely great to hear, because I know, and I tease these guys, because they gave me a pretty hard time of being excited about the Surveil lands when they were first spoiled.
Michigan.
I know. I was a believer from the start. That's all I want to say.
Show me the receipts. I want to point out that I did not say they were bad.
I am pretty sure that it is episode one. It is back to the pilot episodes, my friend. I am almost certain. But anyways,
you guys have got the recordings there.
We do.
Splice it in.
There is proof. But anyways, that's great to hear that they've been playing well, and that it's been great to see that a lot of people have been enjoying those. And like you said, it's cool because it looks like that cycle is broken up a little bit, right? Am I seeing that it looks like you've got all 10 of them. Is that correct?
So I have all 10 Surveils. It's the final cycle of lands, right? So you've got things like Celestial Colonnade in, you know, blue white, but you've got, for instance, Sheltered Thicket.
Girl. Yeah, that makes most sense.
And so that, right, you can fetch it, but, you know, you can also discard it every turn and put it back in your hand with Ren and Six, you know, when you're in the late game, which, you know, it's an extra red-green fetchable for red-green lands decks that want to run something like Field of the Dead. Having three different fetchable lands in Gruul with different names, you know, really helps the, you know, green-red base Field of the Dead decks too. And so all the lands are set up to, you know, essentially turn on various archetype synergies that color pair is going to see.
Yep, I dig it.
Well, very cool. Yeah, if Wizards would finish the Bicycle Land cycle, I would be over the moon about that, because I think
Horizon lands first.
Okay, no, that's fair. We've been waiting for those longer. That is true. That is, yeah. But
it's been a long time. Future Sight, correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh yeah, I guess I was gonna say we haven't, but then if you go back to Future Sight, that's true. I, you know, personally, this goes back to my Aristocrats roots. You know, I want the black red Horizon land so then I can sack it with Mayhem Devil and draw a card and, you know, kill their Thalia.
Yeah. Oh, you're just being nasty now. That sounds like a good time.
The value engine.
Want the whole set for Korvold, for sure. But, I mean, it does sound like you've put a great deal of thought into all this. So, what all thoughts have come out of it, I'm curious then? What have you learned from designing this cube about Magic, or do you feel like you've had any big takeaways?
Yeah, so, if we're talking from the cube design side of things, you know, I'd have two, you know, main things here. Since I don't play other, you know, Magic formats, you know, I guess I don't have broader Magic takeaways, but the first big takeaway I've got, test cards, you know, don't be afraid to do it. You know, I couldn't count the number of times someone's told me a card was too busted or too weak for this cube. And I also couldn't count the amount of times they were right. But when that happens, you just cut the card, right? You know, what's the worst that happens? You know, Boros is too good in this draft. That's going to happen from time to time. But, you know, if I hadn't tested these cards that are weird or, you know, don't catch the, you know, community spotlight during review season, cards like Obnixilus the Adversary or Winota or even, you know, Elish Norn No Title, the one from, you know, March of Machine, those are all cards people told me absolutely not good enough. You know, no way they're going to get there. And I consider them fantastic cards within the format that really give it the texture that I'm looking for.
I like that. You know, I'm in a place where I have recently started listening to feedback again. Now that, you know, the cube's finally in a place where I'm kind of happy with it. And I can't say I've had anything be, what's the word, like misleadingly good, where someone like thought it was going to be bad and then it overperformed. But I have had a lot where people were right. So I'm thankful that people are really paying attention when they're drafting, because I've had a lot of people say things are too good or too weak, and they've either accordingly gotten cut or, you know, needed buffed. So player feedback is invaluable.
Absolutely. And the second, you know, cube design thing, I always say that, you know, the relationship between a cube designer and the players of their cube is kind of like a doctor and a patient. you know, the players are really good identifying symptoms, you know, far better than the designer is. But the designer really has to, you know, interpret those symptoms and figure out what's actually, you know, wrong with the list, or if anything is wrong. You know, players love to say, ah, this card is bad, or, you know, this cube needs more lifelink. And, you know, maybe it needs more lifelink, but probably what that means is, you know, had they had a lifelink creature, they would have won, you know, in a certain matchup. And as a cube designer, we actually have to decide, you know, should people be able to win in that situation, which isn't something that, you know, players typically think about, right? They, you know, they always are just trying to win. But as a cube designer, you know, we have to make the decision, should situations like that be winnable? Or, you know, is it an intended feature of the cube that, you know, when you're down like this, you really, you know, don't have the ability to come back? Because if you did, it would swing all of these other situations and make people lose in situations that feel worse. You know, balancing that's always hard, but that's an important takeaway that I've certainly had from curating this list too.
Right. Yeah. Your opponent is repeatedly recurring Deep Forest Hermit and has 25 tokens, and your complaint is there needs to be more board wipes in the cube. And it's like, buddy, you were doomed. Calm down.
A situational thing at best.
Yeah, you were supposed to die here.
Just exactly. You were supposed to die here. That's something that I think cube designers need to maybe sometimes be more comfortable, you know, feeling about situations in the cube. And that's not to say there aren't plenty of times I've gotten fantastic feedback, which has helped me, you know, shape the cube in ways that are absolutely positive. It's just, you know, not everything that's feedback means that your cube needs to change.
Agreed.
Well, speaking of that feedback, do you have a way by which you track either that feedback or kind of like how color pairs are doing in your cube, as far as like a data collection side of that? Or how do you go about kind of taking that data in and turning it into changes to the list?
Yeah, so I don't do any, you know, statistics for my cube. So my take on this, and I don't mean this to, you know, be a negative towards anyone who does have cube statistics, but unless you're on MTGO, you're really not going to get statistically significant data to do the analysis on your cube. And even if you do have that data, it's really not controlled for things like player skill or the other sources of variance in there, especially with a small, you know, sample size. But I view this as a positive. So what I love about cube, right, is it's not a format where you can just go online and see what's best. You know, I like games where, you know, the right answer isn't something you can just go, you know, find out.
Look up.
And we get to discover that. Exactly. And so while I recognize tools like 17 Lands are great for Realtail Limited, you know, if you want to improve, I'm so glad there's not a 17 Lands, you know, for Cube or my Cube where someone can tell me, you know, Jake, this card's win rate is, you know, disproportionately high. Not that I want cards necessarily to feel, you know, oppressive, but there are going to be cards in any given Cube that are that. So overall, you know, I like to focus on, you know, player experiences when I'm sitting there in draft. Sometimes I think my players are shocked when I'm half listening to their game across the room and I, you know, chime in on something and they say, "Why, we didn't realize you were listening." And it's, you know, it's those cards that lead to negative play experiences multiple times that I'm not going to keep around. Like I say, I don't have data-driven decisions for the cube. I have experience-driven decisions.
Awesome. Well, Jake, are there any particular archetypes or strategies players should be looking out to take advantage of in your list going into the draft?
Yeah, I always think this question's hard as a designer because, you know, I don't cultivate, you know, certain things to be better than others, obviously, but my typical, you know, advice if you're coming into the cube is build around the cards that have strong floors and insane ceilings. There are lots of decks that can 3-0 a pod, but one of my unstated design goals here is that a pile of good cards without a coherent plan could reasonably 2-1, but it's rarely going to 3-0. You're going to lose in the finals to someone whose deck is more than the sum of its parts.
Just bonkers, you know, are way from a power level slightly above your above the piles.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, a card that I would reference here, you know, for example, is like Yawgmoth Thran Physician. So this card, totally reasonable on its own. You know, when you put it together with, let's say, a brand new card, Forsaken Miner from the recent set, it just absolutely draws you a million cards and mows down all of your opponent's threats, right? You know, you're just paying black mana to give a creature -1/-1 and draw a card over and over again.
That's
and so
dirty.
Yep. Yeah, because Yawgmoth commits the crime while it's in the graveyard.
Oh,
so then it just comes back.
God.
And so that's the kind of thing you should be looking to take advantage of here.
And Ryan
synergies.
Is Ryan is running to TCG Player to put this in his cart right now.
I be right back. Let me just go.
Yep. Works with Goblin Bombardment too. Another, you know, great card in the cube. But Goblin Bombardment, you know, while I do think it's a really good card in the cube, the floor on Goblin Bombardment is a lot lower than Yawgmoth. So I do recognize that that's probably not as high of a pick. And to be clear, taking Yawgmoth pack one, pick one of the cards that maybe are just, you know, true power outliers, you know, could be tough. But a lot of the power outliers in this cube are either, you know, limited in how long they're power outliers in the game, or they're power outliers that make your deck better at doing things that it was already doing. So, you know, Fable of the Mirror Breaker is my example here. It's probably the best card in the cube. You know, every cube's got to have a best card. But what I love about Fable is Fable wins by making your deck better at doing what it was already set up to do. You know, it's digging you towards the things that your deck has. It's providing you mana to do those things. It's copying other creatures that you've got, you know, in the cube. And I like the best cards to be cards like that, rather than, you know, cards that win the game by themselves. It's
very versatile and can fit into a lot of decks. It's even very splashable, right?
Yeah, it's definitely splashable. Another reason that I think it's such a, you know, high pick in the cube.
Wonderful.
So do you have any advice to new players that are going to be drafting the cube for the first time, which clearly there's going to be at Cali Cube Champs? Is there anything in particular that they should be looking out for in this cube that's a little bit different than other cubes that they've come across before?
Absolutely. So got three things for you here. So first, new players to the cube tend to undervalue picking up other Cogwork librarians in the draft. You know, you can bank multiple Cogworks, and you can even use multiple in the same pack. So people tend not to realize this, and I think it's something that you can get a huge advantage in the draft for. You know, I personally value them around the same priorities of fetch land for a deck that's trying to stay open. You know, I wouldn't take it over Fable of the Mirror Breaker or an on-color Shockland, which, as an aside, getting your on-color Shockland once you're in a color pair really matters. There's a lot of fetch lands, but there's only two of them. Don't pass those. But these are the kinds of cards you want to be able to cog for. But if your pack doesn't have those, you know, really consider taking that Cogwork. I see a lot of times, you know, a player taking, you know, a middle-of-the-road replacement-level card instead of a Cogwork Librarian, and I think you're giving up a lot of equity when you do.
Yeah, that's definitely something we've found when we've done that with Ryan's as well, because I know he's a big fan of the Everybody Starts with a Cogwork Librarian, and just, you know, making sure that you're taking either a card that is really a key role player for your deck, or picking up, you know, a Cogwork Librarian that's floating around in a pack. I mean, the Cogwork should be the pick most of the time, so that you can bank on some more powerful picks down the road.
I mean, in our previous podcast episode, right, we were just talking about this. Somebody had swapped in, I think, was it 6 or 7 Cogworks in a single pack? Was that the record that they had had?
That sounds about right. Yeah. Yes. And that's, which is, you know, crazy sounding turn, you know, in a pick from a draft pod, but still, you know.
Yeah. Our record is 4. If, you know, if you're at Cali Cube Chance and you beat that record, you know, I absolutely want to hear about it. But yeah, 4 is our record here. But yeah, don't pass us. This can be a heated debate topic among cube players. You know, I've seen a lot of vehement discussion about where these belong in the pick order, but you know, that's where I personally rank them, at least.
I think you're pretty close in gauging their power level, personally. I think, obviously, they get worse as the draft moves on, which is something to say that you have, like, a sliding scale of importance. But pack one, close to a fetch land does seem reasonable for sure. Very powerful pick.
And that's a great point. if it's pack, you know, 3, about halfway through, and you wonder why you're seeing them all. You know, you can take them with you, but if you put Cogwork Librarian in your deck in this cube, something went very wrong in the
Right. You're playing World Myths.
Now I have a goal. now I have a goal. I'm trying to build the 8 Cogwork Librarian deck.
I mean, that's, if you do that, that's awesome. You know, I'd love to see it. And so second tip, double fetches are a defining feature in this environment. You have cards like Kroxa, Mayhem Devil, Treasure Cruise that are much higher picks than they are in cubes without the double fetches. You know, there are plenty of other cubes that do the double fetch, but don't sleep on that. Your graveyard is going to be more full. Deathrite Shaman, another example of a card. You know, between you and your opponent, they're going to be fetches in the graveyard every game. You know, Deathrite Shaman
is the full 1-mana Planeswalker.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's a really cool card that has a lot of cool play to it. So I love it in the cube. But yeah, you know, these are cards that you should reflect on different.
Nice. Do we, so you know, you don't have any statisticals tracking, which that's perfectly acceptable. I think we've got a lot of curators on here actually who have kind of had a similar consensus that they're more interested in the feel of the draft and of their players than of the numbers themselves. I'm sorry, Ryan. I'm curious, do we have any outliers right now? Like, I know I see on here you have a watch list tag. So there are a couple things already being kind of watched for Oopsie, You're Too Good. But are there any archetypes on that list or anything you need to maybe trim back on or you're considering trimming back on?
See, so there isn't a specific archetype I'm worried is overperforming right now. You know, last year I had a bit of a problem where it's just green mid-range, you know, one drop dork into three drop good threat. I thought was overperforming a little bit, which is why you'll see that there's a limited number of one mana dorks. You know, a lot of times people look at the list and they say, you know, hey, instead of Paradise Druid, I'd rather have, you know, land anywhere else. And the answer is I know that as a player, you'd rather have that, but I think it's better for the environment to keep it, you know, with the ones that there are there. Boros Aggro has definitely performed very well since the fetch lands came in, but I also like having aggro as kind of the deck to beat in a cube. You know, it's just like Jesse said, you know, I don't draft a ton of aggro myself, but I like that it's accessible to newer players to the draft. And it really means that you understand the pace that games in your cube playing. And that aggro deck, I think, is really important to stopping some of the, you know, more dirtly strategies in this cube from being dominant. So I'm happy with the fact that Boros aggro is good, but it's definitely something that I have my eye on.
Speaking of Boros aggro, to get to some card specifics, I was noticing Winota, Joiner of Forces in the list. Is that part of the reason you think that red-white has been standing out, or are there other reasons for that?
So, I absolutely think Winota is a top-tier card in this cube. I would recommend people take it very highly. You know, there are a lot of great... If you're drafting Winota, take low CMC non-humans, high CMC humans. Your best cases are high CMC humans that make non-humans, like a Blade Splicer, right? You get a Blade Splicer and then the token starts attacking and it, you know, triggers Winota more times. That's great. But I don't think it's Winota specifically. You know, I think Aneem Pakal is great. Riders of Rohan is a spicy card that isn't in a lot of cubes, but is probably the best single Winota hit, you know, in the whole cube. But as a whole, I think there's enough fixing that your two color aggro decks can be truly capable of playing, you know, one drops in either color reliably on turn one. And these decks just have, you know, some of the most proactive threats. And so they ask the question. And if the other decks aren't set up to answer those questions well, they get punished. I think the deck is particularly punishing two decks that have stumbled in the draft. And so I think that brings performance up somewhat.
I will say I like enough of what you're doing here that I may have a slew of tabs open already from cards I'm fully intent yoink from you. So
what are you looking at there?
You have a fan,
right? Is there anything specific that you're looking at that you're seeing here?
Well, one is something that was already in one. I think it was your cube actually seeing it for the second time. And that's World Soul's Rage.
Yes.
The sorcery that deals X damage and put X land cards from your graveyard onto the battlefield.
That was
tapped
on my list to talk about here. Yeah.
Yeah. I already have Land Matters in the cube, and Gruul is doing exactly that. You know, I'm on the Renin 6 and kind of wanted to have some more support, so I think that's coming in. My cube very much supports Blink, and I'm seeing Twinning Twins, and I had never noticed this card before, and it seems very good.
Yeah, so this is one of the cards that really stood out in the KubeCon drafts. You know, it was in this really interesting, it was like a Bant Blink list that blinked Primetime with Fields of the Dead, which...
Oh, it was, what?
I saw the deck picture and I was like, that's weird. I've never seen, you know, this kind of deck before. And it was an absolutely dominant deck. And the drafter told me that Twinning Twins was one of the Twining Twins, I believe, actually, is one of the, you know, best cards.
Yeah, that's
in it.
I think I'm memeing too hard with the twinning thing. But,
but yeah. me too. It's a tough one in that respect. But yeah, this card, you know, it's a blink spell. It's also just, you know, Sarah Angel with Ward for 4 mana, blue.
Yeah, a very, very decent flyer for sure. And it being versatile enough that it's it is also a tempo spell is nice to me, because a lot of blink cards do say that you control and so few actually allow you to tempo someone's attack. Like when they're threatening a planeswalker, you don't want them to clear, or, you know, even just threatening your life total at the very, you know, on the last moments of the game, you're able to blink what they're doing. And yeah, I'm a fan of its versatility.
Well, the fact
sure.
that this is kind of a secret answer for anybody who just did something like a treachery or a bribery as well. Seems mm-hmm. like it has a lot more Owner's value control, yeah, than I was initially giving this card, because I did kind of note this as an interesting card in the multicolored section, but I am definitely a fan of that as well.
Yeah, no treacheries or bribery.
Last
here,
card.
Right, no, good. That's right. Yeah, which are, yeah, not cards we find in this list, but still, for people who are interested in that, I think that that's maybe another reason to look at this card, and it has me excited about this card as well. And so, but it also, like you said, just is a great way to blink things, and then is a relevant creature attached to a spell, which is always one of the, you know, the greatest things about the adventure cards.
Yep, two cards for one. The last card I have open is just because my cube is becoming so grandy and I'm all about it, I'm here for it, is Marin of Clan Nel'thoth. It's a classic from the old days of Commander, and this card just screams grind. So yeah, this is probably going to have to make its way into my
it's
cube.
It's a 3-4 that's going to regrow you, your best creature, at the floor. As long as it, you know, if they immediately have a, you know, 4 toughness removal spell that they can hold up, yeah, it's going to be worse than that. But when it gets going, it's a lot of fun.
Oh yeah. No, it's definitely the aesthetic, the feel I'm going for in my cube, where it's just like, I'm trying to accumulate resources better than you accumulate resources. And that card just says that on it, so I'm about it.
Yeah, it's been a card that's been in and out of my list as well. I definitely do enjoy it as a card, and so it's a lot of fun when you can get it to go off. But it kind of, and this looks about the speed of the cube that I would expect to see something like this in. So I definitely could, yeah, see this being an absolute way to close out a game in this list. So. I also see Gruff Triplets in this list, which is something that I've been talking about with some of the local players that are designing some cubes in my group that we're looking for some additional cards in the mid-range green section to play. Have you had many opportunities to test with that yet, Jake, as far as how that's been doing in this list?
Yeah, so I think it's a solid top end in green. I don't actually love that I have 4 green 6 drops. You know, I sort of aspire to cut one at some point to diversify the curve a little bit, but I like them all. So I haven't been able to do that. Sure. Yeah, I mean, Gruff Triplets is, it's just so hard to answer. You know, if you board wipe it, you know, absolutely. But it's one of those cards where if it's coming down early, you know, it's closing out games a lot of the time. You know, blinking it is absolutely absurd. This was the other top end in that blink deck. You know, there was a Soul Herder Gruff Triplets turn. Let me put it this way. There's no way to come back from, you know, a blinked, you know, Gruff Triplets short of a board wipe, you know.
Yeah, I have a screenshot image on my computer of where actually I got paired up with Marshall from Limited Resources and in an MTGO Vintage Cube. And he very quickly in the game, like, Black Lotus into a sneak attack, put one of these on the battlefield, and proceeded to just absolutely smash me to oblivions. And so, yeah, this card is definitely a house that people should watch out for, because unless you, like you said, you have a board wipe to answer this thing, it can be game over pretty quick if you don't have a lot of great ways to deal with it.
Yeah, and to be fair, that's where I want my 6 drops to be, right? 6 mana is not a given in this cube. The cards that are up there should be cards that are threatening to end the game.
For sure, for sure. I think the only reason it came out of my cube and it just hasn't accidentally made its way back in, it came out early because at the time, I think it made its way back in this last revision. It got cut because I had a lot of the red spells that did 3 damage in the cube as an answer to aggro. And that made him just much worse since they all board wiped him, and not super great to slam Gruff Triplets against Sweltering Suns. Yeah, so I had like Slagstorm and Sweltering Suns in the cube. And between that, the other board wipes and Toxic Deluge and stuff like that, I'm like, okay, this card's just not in a good place. But now I'm curious to check my own list.
Jake, can I ask how Nexus of Fate has been for you?
So I love Nexus of Fate. I'm glad that you highlighted it. I think it's a great card in the cube. It's another one that I think it's a great call out here. I think it's one of the cards that, you know, doesn't make its way into a lot of cube lists. So there's not a combo self-mill deck. I know the, you know, Demonic Consultation, Thoracle decks have been catching on in Vintage Cube of late. You know, nothing crazy like that here. You know, the decks that are milling themselves here are usually control decks that have this, you know, as a win con. Although Nexus of Fate also sees some play in, you know, bigger rampy style decks. Blue green ramp, pretty happy to surprise take 2 turns. Yep. And my personal favorite, you know, combo with it is Chandra Hope's Beacon, which is the 6-mana 1 from March of the Machines.
Yeah. So
you can +1 exile the top 5 cards of your library to look for an instant. So when you cast Nexus, you get 2 turns because she copies it. Then you can +1 twice, digging 10 cards deep to try to find Nexus again. Very quickly here, you can make it so Nexus is the only card left in your library. And then you can cast infinite Nexus of Fates until Chandra has enough loyalty to just lava axe them in the face to death.
Oh, I love it.
God, stacking Nexuses. Oh.
Yeah. So.
Or Nexus turns. That's awesome. Yeah,
that's probably the closest to true combo that exists in the cube. I'm not a big combo player. There's not any true combo decks here. You know, in this case, right, you've resolved a 6-drop and you're repeatedly resolving a 7-drop. You know, what your opponent's really got to let that happen.
Right.
You have to work to set it up. But if you do that, it is a fun little infinite loop that you can pull off.
Arcane Savant and a blink deck with that also sounds absolutely delicious as well. So with like a Displacer Kitten, I just got to say, as we're looking at things that are not in this list, so let's not give anybody any ideas. But as we're talking cards here, I think that would be a pretty gross little combo loop. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I had to cut some of the cards because of Arcane Savant. I had accidentally put in ways to just go infinite with Arcane Savant by himself. And I was like, this needs to not be a thing.
Yeah, I could believe it. That's, I think, part of the reason why Aqua is running that in his list is there's definitely some pretty gross things you can do with that card.
Epiphany.
Yeah. Just in the game. Exactly. So. Jesus. Well, cool. Well, Jake, if you were drafting your own cube here in a competitive environment like Cali Cube Champs is going to be, is there something that you would draft out of this list in order to spike your own cube or any cards that you would be looking for in particular to take advantage of?
Yeah, absolutely. So there isn't a specific archetype, you know, I think I'm on the lookout for, but what I'm probably trying to do is manage my Cogworks effectively, you know, so I'm going to be looking to scoop up a couple and then move in really hard on that first powerful build around that I see. The other cards that I think you should be paying attention to, the power outliers in the 1-2 CMC slot are at a premium here. You know, there aren't that many cards that are just crazy good. And so if you get a chance to grab those, you know, you absolutely should. You know, they aren't power outliers forever, but there will be some games where they're dominant and, you know, I intentionally not having, like I mentioned with the mana dorks, you know, I'm very careful about making sure there aren't too many of those. So when you get the opportunity to take them, you know, the best 2-drop in the cube is much better relative to the average 2-drop than the best 5-drop is, for example.
Right. I would agree with that. Orcish Bowmasters is a very strong card.
Yeah. Called out for the Orcish Bowmasters.
Just a completely obscene card.
Yeah, so it's a card that I've actually, you know, spent a lot of time thinking about. You know, I certainly don't want it to be, you know, a true outlier here. But there's no draw 7 combo in this cube, you know, whatsoever. That isn't to say it's not still a very good card, but so far, I haven't felt that it's been problematic in a way that it needs to come out. You know, because there's no draw 7 combos, you can just go over the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's obviously with a brainstorm or ponder or something of that nature, right? That's when you really get them.
If your opponent has 2 black mana up, you know, and you're thinking about brainstorming, you know, be careful. That's that's definitely true. When that happens, you know, probably not having a great time, but you know, I've told you now, you know, you've listened to this. So if that happens to you, Cali Cube Champs, you
deserved.
Jake, I did have a question in your Selesnya slots. I saw that you had 2 newer playtest cards. Have you tried Arwen or Arwan out from Lord of the Rings, the green white legend?
So I had her in for a little bit. I don't actually think she got enough testing before she came out. There were just something about the, you know, new release schedule. Sometimes cards just come out because I'm more interested in, you know, a new card without really getting to test those. You know, I recognize that that's a choice that I'm making, not a, you know, requirement, but I think she'd be good here. I think ability counters are a little bit cumbersome from a tracking perspective. And absolutely. So when I saw, you know, Tristani and LCI Kellen come out, I was more than happy to kind of migrate that card away so that I didn't have to, you know, maintain it. I actually, for every card that has external game pieces, I have an envelope that has a printed image of the card on the front So, you know, like the Seasoned Pyromancer picture is on an envelope that has elemental tokens for Seasoned Pyromancer. And so I like this because it helps keep everything organized, but it has also made me conscious of, you know, cutting cards for equivalent cards so that I don't have to, you know, manage those external game pieces.
Bring additional tokens with you and or rolls or game tracking devices.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm trying to personally just keep it to where I'm tokens only, but I am also supporting tokens as one of the archetypes, so my stack is growing, and I don't even have all the tokens I need yet, so I feel the struggle.
Yep, I also have some supported tokens decks, and that definitely, you know, means that there's a fair few cards that make tokens, and, you know, they keep printing new good ones and all the
foil tokens, foil tokens.
Let's keep rolling on that tokens theme here for a moment, because I did notice that you are currently testing Chatterfang Swirl General in this list, which looks like a lot of fun as well. Have you had much play experience with that, or any idea how that's been playing with the token generation decks in your cube?
Yeah, so Chatterfang is a card that I ran a long time ago, and ultimately I took out. But with some of the new token makers and payoffs, like Sandstorm Salvager from the recent set, I really like is, you know, Blade Splicer-esque that also can, you know, be an overrun that permanently has all your tokens. And so I was interested in putting Chatterfang back in to see how it plays. And so far, I've really liked it. You know, Deep Forest Hermit is, of course, the dream where you get 8 squirrels and it buffs Chatterfang and all of those squirrels. But it beats down reasonably well enough on its own. And yeah, I have liked it. I don't think it's a card I'm pack one pick wanting based on the testing so far. But if I'm in a deck that's making tokens, I'm happy to do it. And there's also a lot of, you know, artifact-y tokens that even sometimes a blue-green deck is pushing out that Chatterfang also sometimes just, you know, clogs up the board for them a little bit so they, you know, get one of their really powerful top-end threats.
Yeah, no, hold on. I just found another card.
Ooh.
I am definitely putting Blossom and Tortoise in my cube.
This card has exceeded my expectations. You know, the infinite combo with Lava Claw Reaches is really cute. I don't have it because I think Lava Claw Reaches is really underwhelming card if you don't have Blossoming Tortoise out.
Yeah, it's a little mid now.
But yeah, this fills the graveyard. It gets you, you know, it ramps you lands for things like Field of the Dead. You know, it makes your Restless lands cheaper to activate. It buffs those lands. You know, it's one of those cards where it's just a great role player. It does a lot for a lot of decks, even if it's not, you know, the best card in any of them.
Right. I think what actually pushed me over the top is I don't love like 2-card I win combos, but I love like what you just said with Chandra and Nexus of Fate, right? Where 2 cards that you're very, very happy to have in the game at the same time. So for me, you know, like kind of like Orcish Bowmasters and Wheels, like you don't technically win. 7 damage doesn't kill your opponent unless they happen to be at 7, but it's very potent and you're like, yay, I did the thing. And that's exactly the vibe I get from Blossoming Tortoise and Life / Death, which is in my cube.
Ooh.
And the idea of just 1 green attack you for 12 with my lands.
That's awesome. Amazing.
That's pretty cool. I can't deny. I hadn't thought of that one.
I don't think I've ever had that one slid through my brain.
Yep, that's going right in. Let me just find a card to cut real quick. Oh, I love this. Sick. Well, I mean, I think we've explored your cube a good deal. I think Alex was about to kick us out and move us on to Cube Champs. You're obviously excited to get down there and play, it sounds like. But do you have any specific expectations for the upcoming Cali Cube Champs?
I mean, so I'm really excited. You know, Joe's a good friend of mine. We met at KubeCon last year. Have stayed in touch. You know, I'm meeting a lot of other, you know, friends from KubeCon in other spaces there. You know, I love Cube. I expect both the, you know, cubes during the event plus the after hours cubes to be a really good time. Yeah, nothing but great expectations for the event.
Social interaction is a good reason to be going, and I look forward to meeting you.
Jake, besides your cube, which other cubes are you hoping to draft at the event?
Yeah, so let's Bolt Cube, I want to give a huge shout out to here from Keldon. Yeah. I got to draft this at KubeCon. This is such a fun list. You know, weird cubes, are awesome. You know, sometimes they break my brain a little bit.
Fair.
This one, I found it was so easy to reevaluate the cards in the draft. Not to say that it's easy to draft, but it's so different that it was easy for me to get my brain to say, okay, you have to look at these cards, you know, differently. And so I drafted this sweet Pia's Revolution combo deck where I would sack Mishra's Bauble infinite times to draw into my Greater Gargadon, which then I would sack Bauble with a bunch more times to kill him with a 9-power haster that turn. And
I love that Greater Gargadon. I top eight my very first states with that guy. Oh, so
awesome. I'm also a big Greater Gargadon fan. So I was thrilled to get to do this. It's such a cool list. I highly recommend people do it. And you know, I love drafting cubes like this blind. Probably not the strategy if you're trying to top eight. I'm not a great Magic player, so you know, my goal is not to top eight the event, it's just to show up and have a good time. So I'm thrilled to draft this one.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the same boat. Well, I guess I wasn't trying to say I'm not good at Magic, but I like to think I'm a little above average, but I think the core focus for me is just get up there and see more sick cubes and have a good time. And as you say, I have been very much looking forward to playing Keldon's cube, because when I was hanging out with him up there at Washington Cube Champs, I got to hear a bit about it, but I've not got to jam yet. So that's hype.
Oh, it's awesome. And yeah, it definitely recommend it. It was the last cube I drafted at KubeCon. So I think it was draft 15 for me across those days. And you know, one might think that would really hurt my head, but I felt energized after doing it. So
for sure,
stole the energy from everyone else. I see.
Yeah. Other lists. So Tempo Cube is one I wanted to try at KubeCon. You know, that's by Grenrut, who is someone I met at KubeCon and got to do some drafts with. Awesome guy. Really excited to give this one a shot. Iganjo Drift, which we had the episode on, is definitely weird. I've never gotten to try it, but I've liked every cube from Bones that I've tried. So
Hyper Ace.
Bones is a great cube designer. So, if he sits me down and says, hey, I made this, I'm going to try it once. And then I think the 1-1 cube. I think the 1-1 cube is such a cool concept. As we're recording this, the episode, that one just came out today. I'm going to listen to that on my commute to work tomorrow. Excited to learn more about it, but it's just a really interesting design restriction.
Thanks for listening.
Of course.
Well, very cool. Well, talking about all the cubes that you do want to draft, have you had an opportunity to draft any of the cubes that are going to be at the event before? Is that any of these that you've gotten a chance to draft at KubeCon or at Kelly Cube Champs in the past?
Just the Bolt Cube. So all the other lists are, new to me. I've been in the room while Aqua's cube was drafted, while I was drafting a different cube at KubeCon, but I haven't gotten a chance to try the one myself. Also on my list that I want to try. But yeah, just the Bolt Cube in terms of stuff I've tried before.
Definitely a must play. But I think that does the bulk of what we wanted to bug you about, Jake. I think we're going to set you free. Where can people get a hold of you at in the future? I know you're Deinonychus on Discord. Is that your preferred method of contact, or is there somewhere else they should reach out?
Yeah, so I'm super active on, Cube Talk, KubeCon Discords. I mean, the Cali Cube Champs Discord, my cube's got a thread on there. If you have any questions, fire them off. I get into, lengthy cube design discussions there. Fair warning, we might talk for a long time, but that's good. You can follow me on Twitter. HGS Cube is my handle. And if you also, last but not least, I do write articles with Bones on Cube Cobra. So Bones and I write cube set retrospectives about a year after a set has been released. We go back and we look at how those cards did, how we liked them in our cubes. And so we get those published on Cube Cobra. And if you're interested in that kind of content, definitely recommend you check it out.
Nice. Will do.
Yeah, I will try to link the most recent one you guys did in the show notes so people can find those and take a look at them. We'll definitely tie that into this episode here.
Awesome.
And that, team, is the end of our episode, and we've got some event shout-outs here. We have some tickets available for June 22nd and June 23rd, the Boston Cube Party, $65 entry, and the tickets are still available. And remember, team, KubeCon Madison, Wisconsin, tickets for Game Hole go on sale May 24th, and then for KubeCon itself, they go on sale on June 15th. And then finally, team, we have tickets available for the Barbecue at Mana Vault Games in Madison, Wisconsin, June 15th. There's a 64-player event cap with a $70 entry fee and a $2,500 prize payout. And tickets are still available for you. The tickets are still available for that event.
Lots of great events. We're definitely going to modify our shout-outs in the future, too, where I think we're going to be calling out just the one where tickets are available. So, obviously, other Cube events are still happening here in the future as well, but a lot of those are sold out, and so we're going to continue to call out the ones where tickets are available. So, but, Jake, thank you so much for coming on the episode with us here today. It's been a blast talking about your Cube. Had a lot of fun talking about some new cards and some new interactions that we haven't had a chance to do, and we are going to have you back in the future to talk some more Cube, because this has been way too much fun.
Oh, man, I would love to come back on. This has been a really great time. I've enjoyed talking to you all. Looking forward to meeting those of you who are coming. Are you all coming to Cali Cube, Chance?
Just me.
Oh, well, Jesse. All our hopes and dreams are on you.
You will get to meet our little, like, kind of our secret fourth member who often gets mentioned on the show, and Patrick, buddy of mine, who's been mentioned a lot of episodes. He's coming with me. Awesome. And I think he's going to be on when we do the event retrospective. So he will finally put a voice to the character.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, we've talked about him enough. We need to get him on. We've been talking about a lot of cubes with a lot of cube designers, but eventually we will get Jesse on here as well. So, but
I'd love to be on. That'd be great.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you know, you can tell that it's been a long day for Alex. So let's wrap this up and send us out of here, guys. Well, thank you for joining us for today's discussion. Everybody, remember, this show has an email, which is squaresthatcube@gmail.com, where you can reach us and send us feedback about this episode or suggestions for content that you may have. We're always excited to see questions from listeners, and we've definitely done episodes on that in the past as well. Hope to do some more in the future. So please remember to send us in those questions. We do also have a Facebook group, which is the PNW Cube Drafts Facebook group that you can get a hold of us on. It has a corresponding Discord server that we can get you linked into from that Facebook if you're interested. Even if you're not from the Northwest, we would love to have you join just to help build up that group, to talk some more Cube, and so you can see all the wonderful things that we are doing out here in the Pacific Northwest area. So with that, thank you everybody for joining us. We hope you have a great week.
Yeah, goodbye everybody.
Happy Tuesday, everybody.
Tuesday.
Goodbye.